We've all heard some great lawyer jokes. Trust us, we've heard them, all of them. But without sounding too adversarial, lawyers are humans too. In fact, that's the main theme of this podcast. Welcome to The Human Lawyer, the time and place where we have conversations with lawyers focusing on the intersection of the existential and the practical.
It's not every day you get to talk with the Queen of Custody, but today is that day. Rhonda Patterson is a double Tar Heel who began her career in big law before starting her own firm in 2011. Her primary focus, families, her clients, corporate execs, entrepreneurs, professional athletes, entertainers, and the like. You name it, she's probably seen it and represented that type of client. She has consistently served in leadership capacities at the Mecklenburg County Bar for the last 4 years, which is a testament, if anything, to her juggling skills. As the Queen of Custody, she creates all kinds of novel publications like the 12 Commandments of Co-Parenting. She's also been recognized as one of Charlotte's most influential women. She's also met Michelle Obama. For a lawyer who rocks, how does she keep rocking it? There's always new ground to till, and Rhonda is that person with the right garden tool, ready for the job, doing the work, and you never knew she started. Don't sleep on her. Welcome to the Human Lawyer Podcast, Rhonda.
Wow, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, you're welcome. That, you know, I'm sure you have other things to do on a Friday, but here you are, and so we're here for it. Would you come up with Queen of Custody, which is trademarked, by the way?
Yeah, that you're good. Actually, my late mentor, Billy Ellerbe, who passed away, unfortunately, within the past couple of months, I have to thank him for kind of just instilling the confidence in me that I needed to even be able to come up with a moniker like that. He from day one helped me realize that trial and family law litigation is strategy. And I'm not even a chess player, but I know that the queen is one of the most powerful pieces on the chessboard. So we together just kind of came up with that catchy moniker as a nod to my strategic brain and me being a powerful player, I think, for the people that hire me.
That's funny. Like, here I was thinking, like, Queen of Custody was, like, a gender thing. And it's a chess thing.
Yeah, it's a chess thing. It's a chess thing.
That's amazing.
Now, I am a huge Beyonce fan, so it probably does make sense. You know, she's the queen bee, so anything that I can be that's similar is going to work for me as well.
What was your mentor's name?
Billy Ellerbe, long-term law attorney here.
That's what I was going to ask you. What did he practice, family law?
Did family law, one of the greats. So it's a huge loss, but I'm thankful for the years we had.
How did you get that relationship?
I actually met him
at a mentor like that who was able to be with you.
I met him at a legal clinic that another attorney in town was putting on, and he always said that. How does he say it? When the student is ready, the teacher will come. And I think he just took an interest in me and just our personalities just were a great fit. And he took me under his wing and taught me everything he knew. And I am forever indebted to him.
And then your firm, I feel like, at least from Instagram, it grew recently. I mean, you added an associate fairly recently. Is that fair?
Yeah, I hired an associate just about a year ago. And in the process, actually, of bringing on someone else. So it is growing fairly quickly.
That's awesome. How has that been during COVID, like working with your associate and trying to bring someone else on?
It's been tough. In interviewing and talking with my associate, I've just had to check in to make sure I'm meeting their work styles. I think some people are a little more face-to-face. I've always been someone that you give me the task and I'll just go off and do it on my own. So this works for me. But just having to recognize that this might not work for everyone and creating space for like weekly check-ins via Zoom and more phone calls than normal to make sure they're getting what they need.
Okay. What have you noticed? Like, whether it's with your practice, like how maybe things are changing kind of with your clients or with the family court system since March?
You know, really, I haven't noticed that much of a change with my clients. I think in the family law space, clients are, they're always coming to me under trauma. So trauma is not anything new in my world. So that hasn't been much of a change. I think what has been the change is in the family court system. We are being quick and nimble and creative. And I'm actually hoping some of this stuff sticks around. Like just yesterday, I was on a Zoom mediation. I've had tons of hearings via WebEx. We're just being a lot more efficient and bringing our practice up to speed with the world, which is, you know, people living across state lines and, you know, being in different time zones. And so I'm hoping that some of this stuff actually sticks around.
So this is kind of a loaded question because I don't feel like you probably have a sufficient sample size, but have you enjoyed your practice more since March, or are you able to make that kind of judgment call?
I enjoyed it more since March. No, I've not. But not because of a change in my practice, just because of the change in my own life. Many days, candidly, I feel like I'm only triaging. I look at it like emergency room, like we're doing the quick stabilization just to kind of get to the next moment. And that's more just because I'm also now a homeschool teacher. And, you know, I've got two kids at home and trying to balance what they need. I'm like an intellectual, like I want to do deep dives every time I sit down. And a lot of days I just can't do that. And I've really got to block off the time for that. So I've not been able to enjoy it as much as I could just sitting in the office and hammering out, you know, 8 straight hours of work in a day.
Got it. How old are your kids?
Almost 12 and almost 8.
Wow. So.
And they want to be that way. Almost 12 and almost 8. No longer 11.
So what's homeschool like? What would you say you're as good? You're not a teacher, or you think you got a second career?
No, teachers deserve raises and all of our praises. I don't have the patience. It's a conscious effort to make this work. It started off very chaotic, but I also think I had very low expectations when we did it in the spring. We're starting up on Monday, hoping to have a little bit more structure. Yeah, it's a day-by-day process.
So someone without kids expecting our first kid in December, like I don't even know, like, what, when you say more structure, like what do you mean? Like, what does that look like?
So with my daughter, it's not as difficult. She is very much like me, very ordered, very structured. Like, I actually have to get her to take some of the pressure off of herself. My son is more of a free thinker, free spirit. He wants to sleep till noon, you know, wake up, eat, watch a movie or three, then maybe squeeze in like 15 minutes of reading. And so the tough part is, you know, him sleeping in late, him watching movies is great for me knocking out work, you know, but it's not so great for him actually learning third grade material. So, you know, needing to get him on a better schedule so that he can learn, I can work, which means going to bed on time, waking up on time, you know, that sort of thing.
Let me ask you this question, and if you haven't heard anything about it, then we can quickly pivot to something else. I have heard things percolating that in response to virtual learning, families are deciding to create like mini learning pods, mm-hmm. You know, where they're basically, it's like 3 or 4 families are getting together and basically hiring a teacher. What are your thoughts on that?
It's tough. First and foremost, I'm a believer that you have to do what works for your family. And I'm one that says you don't pass judgment when people are doing what works for their family. We're all making very tough decisions. And so if you've made a well-thought decision that works for you, then I'm not gonna have a problem with that. Looking at things from a bigger perspective, of course, I think the concern is, you know, that pulls great teachers out of perhaps the public school system. It pulls funding out of the public school system. And so you kind of have to look at your fingerprint, I guess, on society and weigh what are your family's priorities. But I think for me personally, again, if you're doing what works for your family in this moment, you've got to do that. and go from there. We're all making very tough choices.
Yeah, it's interesting. Your slogan, raises and praises. Like, it's almost like we finally might have the, as difficult as it's been for everyone, the rational justification for the raises and praises. Yeah. Because I think we have a greater appreciation for what it is that's essential.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, they're not only teaching our students, but also, I mean, from the custody side of the work I do, I mean, they're dealing with children who are experiencing trauma at home, and the teachers are the only outlet. So they're the counselors. They're the ones making sure the children are fed and sometimes making sure that their basic needs are getting met. So you're right. I'm hoping that this will create a shift towards getting them the pay and the benefits and the appreciation that they deserve.
Mm-hmm. What's your, I guess, dealing with the virtual learning, do you go into the office much, or do you go, like, what's that look like for you?
I will, starting this week. I've actually had to bring in like a college student who's home doing remote classes. So she's going to come over a couple of days a week so that I can go into the office to do that deep dive that I need to do. In the spring and summer, it's been mostly from home unless a client just demanded it or unless I was in court. But again, this is kind of part of me trying to create some better structure. So going ahead and leaning, I'm one that doesn't like to ask for help, but I finally realized I needed to go ahead and pay for some help to make that happen.
Gotcha. So when I was Googling, or I don't know how I found the most influential women, and it was Mecklenburg Times, right? Mm-hmm. What do they do, Mecklenburg Times?
So they're a newspaper, they're a news organization. And much like the Charlotte Business Journal, who tries to highlight just kind of movers and shakers in town, that sort of thing annually, the Mecklenburg Times focuses their efforts on women in Charlotte. And they pull together a panel of people, they take submissions, kind of looking at, I guess, what is your footprint in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg area? What are your passions? What sort of a difference are you making? And they kind of curate this master list of their 50 women of the year. So I'm thankful to have been on the list. Of all years, this is the year that we will not have a live event. They're moving to a virtual event. So I think in September, they'll push out like interviews with all the women and that sort of thing.
How many of those women that are on that list did you know personally, or have you crossed paths with professionally?
Only about four of them. I was surprised. And that's why I was really looking forward to the live event, to kind of get to network and mingle with these folks. So when the videos come out, I'll be sure to follow the folks after. But yeah, there are a couple of other lawyers on the list. Our judge, Judge Pickling, is on the list. So of course I knew her. But I was surprised that many of the women I hadn't had a chance to meet yet.
So what are some ways, you talk about footprint in Mecklenburg County or footprint in the city, what are some ways that, you leave your footprint beyond, what you do every day as a family law attorney?
Well, I mean, I believe in service because of my faith, because of the sorority I'm in. I just believe in service. I believe that truly is the rent that we pay. And so most of my footprint comes from trying to use my talents, what I'm naturally good at, to help other people, even outside of the courtroom. So I don't believe in just being busy for being busy. So if you find me working with some organization or somewhere, it's because I really believe in it. So, I'm really active with the bar. I'm on the board of a charter school. I'm really active in my church. And so I guess that's the footprint, because that connects me to people outside of the courtroom. And it's tied to just really trying to use what I'm good at to make a difference in people's lives.
So then that two follow-up questions from that. When did you feel like you really figured out what you're good at?
When did I figure out? I will say I have always known that I'm good at writing, public speaking, kind of critical thinking, just because I was always kind of a high flyer student. But it really wasn't until probably meeting my mentor that was probably 2015 or 16, where it all kind of came together and it was able to make sense. It's like, okay, I'm good at these discrete things, and this is how I can use those things to help people and to truly make a living from it. So I think I've always known it. I just didn't always know how to use it, if that makes sense.
It does. So then the next question is, When did you figure out what you cared about? Because one of the things you said was like, if you're into something, like it's because you believe in it. And yeah. I think a lot of attorneys, especially younger attorneys, are challenged by the notion of getting involved in a lot of different things. And so then it just feels like you're busy just to be busy because, you know, this is what you feel like. You're just checking boxes.
Yeah. And then now that I'm saying the same date again, I would say like that 2014 timeframe, I really made a conscious effort to figure out what I cared about. And I'm convinced that oftentimes your pain leads you to your purpose. And so after having gone through a divorce myself, custody and co-parenting issues myself, I kind of had to take a step back and figure out, okay, God, why am I going through these things? why do I find myself in this place? And so I think forcing that kind of self introspection and evaluation helped lead me to the realization that I care about families. I care about people going through that trauma. I care about children. I care about the bar and lawyers and the work that we do. So I'm talking myself into it, I'm like, I guess I had just a major light bulb go off in that 2014-15 timeframe.
Would you say pain gives you through your pain, you find your purpose?
Yeah, I often think our pain is tied to our purpose. You know, I think we can experience pain and sometimes you pray or hope just to get through it and get to the other side. But I think the most impactful people are people who try to figure out why they are going through that pain. And it's just been my experience, and I think the experience of a lot of people around me, that if you really tap into that, sometimes your purpose is attached to those lowest moments.
Has kind of had that, having that clarified purpose, or maybe that a better understanding of what your purpose is, like how has that changed your life like post 2015?
Dramatically. I think it allows me to be bold in what I do. And I hope that people that know me, again, to call yourself the queen of custody, someone may say, well, who do you think she is, you know? And I get that. But I think for people that know me, you know, it doesn't come from a place of like arrogance or haughtiness. It comes from a place of, I know that I'm walking in my purpose. You know, I'm a person of faith, and, you know, I know that this is what God put me on the earth in part to do. So I think it gives you boldness in your talents. For me, my work is also my worship. Again, I view everything I do as if God is watching. And so I serve my clients like it's worship. And, you know, that may sound odd to someone who is not a person of faith. And I know that's not what this is about, but that's how it's changed me. It's just, there is no small thing. Everything is important. And kind of my motto around the office is, we do even the small things with excellence, because it matters and other people are watching.
Yeah. Well, it can be about faith because it's about you. So, we're here for it all. And I think one of the things that's interesting about you, having served on a committee with you for a couple years, is you say it's not about haughtiness or whatever, the queen of custody. And I never knew anything of that about you. I just found it on Instagram and I was like, no way. Like she's been hiding all this. And so that is why I said you're like the garden tool that's already like doing the work and no one knows about it because.
And I like that. I like that. I like to be underestimated. You know, it's always great when I walk in a courtroom with people who have been doing this a really long time and they're like, oh, you know, who is that? And I show them who I am. and again, that's not to say that I don't have losses and bad days and all that kind of stuff. But I think when you love what you're doing and you feel like what you're doing is tied to something bigger than you, you do it with purpose and you do it with excellence, and it makes it more enjoyable.
So like for the younger attorneys now that you get the benefit and privilege of impacting, is that like, how do you, like for instance, your associate, like how do you help him lean into whatever it is that's important to him?
Yeah.
Like, is it Because at some point it's about the work. I mean, you guys have clients to represent, but I think you would probably agree that in part you represent them the way that you do and as well as you do because you're living out your purpose. And that, so is that something that, is that something that you think about as it relates to your associate or other people that you cross paths with?
I think so. People that work with me would probably say I'm a little tough. and that's because, again, I think our clients demand excellence. I demand excellence of myself. And so in a nice way, I demand excellence of those people around me. But I try to make that make sense. So I'm not just demanding excellence, and I don't just care about this typo because I care about this typo. Like I try to help people understand how it fits into the broader scope of what we're doing. And then I try to connect with people. I think where it's natural, like you don't want to like force your way into people's personal lives and interests, but where there's kind of that glimmer of a commonality or common interest, I think having a connection outside of the work opens the doors for communication. And again, helping people understand how our work fits into the bigger picture. So yes, I try to do that and I hope I do it well.
What about faith? When did you realize that it was an important part of your life?
I've always, I grew up in the church. My mom is a pastor. Actually, she became a pastor though when I was in college, so I didn't grow up with her as a pastor. So it's always been there, but I haven't always been as bold or as active in my faith. But again, I think when you kind of hit rock bottom in your own life and you go through things that you never imagined necessarily going through, you have to pull on something. And in those moments, I pulled on my faith. And I think that's when that fire was ignited and has stuck with me ever since.
Where did you grow up?
In Eastern North Carolina, Roanoke Rapids. It's right on the Virginia border.
Wow, that's near the Outer Banks, right? Kind of.
Well, it's north, actually right under the Virginia border. So it's, I guess, kind of near there, but like, it's about, I don't know if you're familiar with the Rocky Mount area. It's like 30 minutes from Rocky Mount, about an hour from Petersburg, Virginia, but on the North Carolina side. So it's not on the coast.
How big of a town? Is it small,
medium? Very, very small. Tiny. It's in Halifax County, which is one of the poorest counties in our state. So that too kind of informs who I am and the person that I am. I grew up without many things. I didn't realize how poor I was until I got to college and saw how other people lived and then had to start connecting the dots and realize, okay, wait a minute, maybe we weren't as well-to-do as I thought that we were, and we weren't well-to-do at all. And so I think I just have a natural interest in helping people out of situations where it may not look that they can come out of, but I'm kind of naturally drawn to those people.
So the whole, your comment that like when you went to school, like you realized that maybe you weren't as well to do as you thought you were, kind of sets the table for privilege. Like in the sense that like, what are some things that like you saw, like when you started to connect the dots, where you were like, dang, I guess we didn't have as much as I thought.
Well, I mean, it was in every way. I mean, just the small things. I mean, you know, I couldn't call home and ask for, you know, extra money. I had to get a job to, you know, have extra money. Even people talking about their high schools and having taken IB courses. We did not have IB courses at my school. Although I was at the top of my class, I found myself in like remedial writing in college and really had to work very, very hard to develop those skills. I met friends that talked about being in organizations such as Jack and Jill, which is an organization for African-American moms and their children. Normally it's people that are very well connected, kind of upper middle class folks. Had no clue what that even was. The college campus kind of opened my eyes, and I mean it in a good way, to a world much bigger than what I ever knew. In many ways, that's kind of the point of college. So I guess it did what it was supposed to do. But it certainly caused me to realized that my parents did a great job of shielding us from some of the things that they were going through at the time.
Do they still live in Halifax County?
They do, yep. My mom and stepdad are still there. They actually own a funeral home in that area. So I don't see them leaving anytime soon.
They're not leaving anytime soon?
No, they have a funeral home there. So yeah, gotcha. They're unfortunately busy, but yeah.
How about your kids? Like how has their persona been impacted since March? How are they doing?
They're doing well. My daughter is starting middle school, so I'm noticing that she's getting a little bummed about the fact that she's not gonna get, I think, what she deemed to be the true middle school experience. So just trying to talk her through finding joy, you know, in all situations. But we really have enjoyed, I think, this time together. Before March, we were also very busy. I mean, some days we'd leave the house at, you know, 6:30 a.m. and not get home till 9 p.m. with track and basketball and everything else. So for a while, this was actually a nice pause for us. And we've done our best at finding joy in every day. So I think they're doing okay. Making sure they stay connected to cousins and friends via FaceTime and Zoom and all that. But I think we've fared pretty well.
What's on tap for the rest of 2020? What are your hopes for either your firm or, you know, personally, or some of the community endeavors that you're involved in?
Yeah, you know, I really do believe, you know, and as you start watching these positive percentage numbers, you know, they're slowly starting to come down. And so I think I'm hopeful that life as we knew it will slowly start to return. And so just making... what's important to me is making sure that we return to normal, kind of with air quotes, without losing some of the positive things we've gained in this period. Again, some of the technological advances in the courtroom, but more importantly, just a refocus on peace and kind of streamlining your life and just focusing on family and nature and the simple things that we all found ourselves doing over the past few months. I want to make sure I don't lose sight of that as the world fully opens back up. So that's really, really important.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Your point about like right after the pandemic, you felt like it was a nice pause for you and your family. And the notion that life has seemed much simpler. And I think there's a portion of that where we get frustrated because there's things, other things that we might want to do, but they might not be things that we need to do. But it seems like we fill our lives with a lot of things that we want to do and then confuse ourselves by thinking that we need to do them when perhaps that's not the way it is. So you make a really good point.
Yeah. I mean, I think I remember the day, I think it was like March 16th. I was leaving court and it was like court shut down like the 13th or the 16th. And what has stuck with me is in a moment, life as you know it can change. You know, for some people that sickness, death, in this case, it was a pandemic. And so just not holding on so tightly, like you said, to the things that you think you need, and just really, really focusing on family and those core things. And so as court fully reopens and kids are back in school and the world gets buzzing and busy again, I don't know that I want to go back completely to how I was pre-March 2020. I hope to come out better.
Well, here's to that. Thank you for being a guest on the podcast. Thank you for being that person that people may underestimate. Keep being that person. And it's fun to watch you work. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. You keep doing what you're doing too.
Okay. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
We need to recognize that this is possible because of the hard work and support of the Well-Run Media team. They make this easy. And speaking of easy, big thanks to Huga Coworking for access to their studio. And of course, the lawyers who agree to take time out of their busy, busy schedules to be here, even though we're sure they have better things to do. So thanks for saying yes.